This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
2-week losing streak. The Dow and the S&P 500 fall for the week as tax reform worries linger.
Home sweet home, looking to build some wealth? Why you may be better off not buying a house.
And a new approach to pain. Doctors want to develop non-addictive medicines to ease severe discomfort, and they are looking to genetics for help. Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Friday, November 17th.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome. A wobbly week for stocks, which saw both triple-digit gains as well as triple-digit losses. The debate over tax reform and corporate news keeping investors on their toes, as is the bond market, which some say is raising concerns about economic growth. Today, when all was said and done, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 100 points to 23,358. The Nasdaq fell 10, and the S&P 500 dropped 6. For the week, the Dow and the S&P 500 recorded their first 2-week losing streak since August. The Nasdaq, though, was higher.
Well, with tax reform on the minds of investors, the Senate Finance Committee voted along strict party lines late last night to advance the GOP proposal. But a heated exchange erupted at the end of the hearing with Ohio Democrat Sherrod Brown and Utah Republican Orrin Hatch, the chairman, arguing over who really benefits.
This tax cut really is not for the middle class, it's for the rich. And that whole thing about higher wages, well, it's a good selling point. But we know companies don't just give away higher wages. They just don't give away higher wages just because they have more money. Corporations are sitting on a lot of money now. They're sitting on a lot of profits now. I don't see wages going up. So just spare us the bank shot, spare us the sarcasm and the satire. And
I'm going to spare it, but I'm going to just say to you that I come from the poor people. And I've been here working my whole stinking career for people who don't have a chance. And I really resent anybody saying that I'm just doing this for the rich. Give me a break. I think you guys overplay that all the time, and it gets old. And frankly, you ought to quit it.
Mr. Chairman, the public believes
it. Just, I'm not through. Okay. I get kind of sick and tired of it. Mm-hmm. True, it's a nice political play.
Well, Mr.
But
Chairman,
it's not true.
With all due respect, I get sick and tired of the richest people.
Regular
in this
order,
country,
Mr. Chairman.
Getting richer and
regular
richer.
Order.
And richer.
Order.
Regular middle. We do a tax.
Regular order.
Middle class.
Wait a minute.
Regular
over
order.
And over and over
wait,
again.
Wait just
how many
a second.
Times do we do this before we learn this?
Senate Republicans are hoping to hold a vote on their tax plan after Thanksgiving. And in an interview today, the Treasury Secretary said he's pleased with the progress.
We're very excited about the timeline. I mean, yesterday was obviously a huge day in terms of having the House pass the bill. That's a great move forward. We're going to have the Senate, as soon as they get back from Thanksgiving, vote on the bill. And our expectation, it would go to conference right away. And we have every reason to think we'll get it to the president's desk before Christmas for him to sign.
Democrats say Republicans are rushing the bill through Congress.
The White House is asking Congress for $44 billion in hurricane aid to help people in Puerto Rico, Florida, Texas, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. The request was short of what some officials say is needed. Puerto Rico's governor is asking for $94 billion, for example. Texas, $61 billion. And Florida has requested $27 billion. Now, the White House budget director said that today's request is not the final one.
One Federal Reserve official says that the U.S. economy is growing enough to withstand an interest rate hike next month. The president of the San Francisco Fed, John Williams, is also looking for 3 interest rate increases next year, bringing the rate to about 2.5%. The Fed currently targets short-term interest rates of between 1% and 1.25%.
New home construction surged to the highest pace of the year in October, but much of that was rental apartments, with the home ownership rate still at historically low levels, at least recent history. Developers are betting big on rentals, and a new study backs that bet. Diana Olick has more.
Home builders were busier again in October, starting new projects at the fastest pace they have all year. Much of that was a bounce back in the hurricane-ravaged South, where single-family construction was strongest. But the biggest driver was here in rental apartments, surging 37% for the month and signaling that demand for rentals is still very strong. Supply has been building in the multifamily sector as home ownership remains historically low, and the supply of entry-level homes for sale is extremely tight. While some, especially politicians, tout the benefits of home ownership, a new study says just the opposite, that it is not the best way to grow your wealth. Economists at three different universities who collaborated on a study of home ownership found that households can make more money investing in stocks and bonds than they can owning a home and waiting for that home value to appreciate. Of course, all real estate is local, and price volatility varies market to market. So the researchers matched local markets with comparably volatile investment portfolios. The portfolios still won. The one caveat here is that for this comparison to work, the renter must invest the savings from renting into stocks and bonds. So if I'm saving $100 a month by renting compared to the monthly cost of owning, I can't spend that on shoes. I have to invest it. And remember, owning a home means insurance, property taxes, and everything that leaks and breaks. And now that the tax breaks that make home ownership enticing are at risk in the Republican tax plan, that all makes renting more attractive. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Diana Olick in Washington.
Owning a home has been the American dream, but according to that study that Diana just referred to, it may not help you build the wealth that you would expect. So is renting the solution? Here to talk more about that and the study's findings is one of the co-authors. He is Ken Johnson, a real estate economist with Florida Atlantic University's College of Business. Welcome. Nice to have you here.
Glad to be here.
So do you think that renting overall it gives the person an advantage in terms of wealth building over time?
It depends on an individual's savings, or ability to save, or their discipline in terms of saving. As a general rule, Americans like consumption, and home ownership at its core is a forced or self-imposed savings vehicle. So it's not always the same for each individual. In our model, we assume that the renters are monastic savers and will reinvest.
How monastic does that are we talking about here? Because I assume that you can tweak the assumptions here a good bit. One would be, how fast are prices rising in the market that you happen to be in versus, I mean, it might be a great market in San Francisco and a lousy market in Youngstown, Ohio. But to get it to come out, I mean, does this mean I have to take my down payment and invest it? Does it mean all of the difference between my rent versus my mortgage plus insurance plus property tax plus maintenance charges and invest that difference every month?
No. It only means that you would need to reinvest your down payment savings that you would have. You wouldn't save them and put them under your pillow. You would actually reinvest the down payment.
Okay.
You would also reinvest any payment savings in terms of a rental versus a mortgage payment. Historically, when you rent a particular property, the rental payment on it will be lower than, say, your mortgage payment, assuming you get a fixed rate mortgage. But through time, your rent will climb up and eventually reach and then go above that of your fixed rate mortgage payment. We account for both of those in our model, but we only assume that you need to reinvest your down payment monies and any monies that you would be saving each and every month. Now, once we go past to where rent becomes a negative in terms of it's now more costly to rent than to own in a monthly periodic payment basis, then it actually hurts the portfolio a little bit, but none of that changes the results. Renting and reinvesting, on average, wins.
How does it gel with the fact that, as Ty mentioned, you have all real estate is local, but if you're investing in a strong market, you may do well. But you know, what if you happen to time it so that you're investing in a bear market or a negative market?
The markets tend to be highly correlated with property appreciation. It's not perfectly correlated, but they tend on average to be highly correlated and slightly overperform. So therefore, for that renter that reinvests, they are simply putting their savings into a better investment vehicle.
On that note, Ken Johnson, I don't know if I'm going to tell my husband about this because he loves to work on the house. Thanks so much for joining us. Ken, of course,
I enjoyed it very much.
The Florida Atlantic University's College of Business.
And still ahead, modern medicine, new hope for managing pain with non-addictive medicines.
The Keystone Pipeline spilled 5,000 barrels or more than 200,000 gallons of oil in South Dakota. And the leak comes just days before the state of Nebraska is set to decide whether to approve a sister pipeline. TransCanada, the company behind the pipeline, said the leak has been contained and that it is investigating the cause. But it did send the shares of TransCanada lower in today's trading session.
Shares of 21st Century Fox rose today on reports we first told you about last night. Comcast said to be in talks to buy Fox's worldwide entertainment and distribution assets in exchange for Comcast shares. The addition of Fox's stake in Hulu would give Comcast control of that streaming video service. Now, all of the recent talk in the industry, deal talk that is, hasn't gone unnoticed by CBS chairman and CEO Les Moonves, who said at a conference last night that CBS might eventually have to do a partnership of its own.
Now we're competing against monstrous companies. Disney is six times as big as we are. Comcast is six times as big as we are. Netflix market cap is huge. Now Amazon, the number one company in the world, is producing content. We're sort of like an old-fashioned production company. You know, we're a small guy. Eventually, are we going to need to do partnerships with other content companies and distribution companies? The answer is probably yes.
Moonves isn't the only media executive talking about all of the changes in the industry. In a separate interview, Liberty Media chairman John Malone said the cable industry missed its opportunity to compete with Netflix, adding that now it's way too late.
On Wall Street, a number of companies made their debuts today, but as Bob Pisani reports, investors seem to be losing interest in initial public offerings.
The IPO market is heating up again, but some fatigue may be setting in. Now, it's been a very active fall for IPOs. So far, there's been 150 of them. That's way ahead of 105 we had last year. Six IPOs began trading today. It's one of the busiest days in years. The most widely known of the new crop is the e-commerce apparel darling Stitch Fix. They priced below their range, but they opened up strongly. And also enterprise security firm SailPoint Technology. They track users on company networks to make sure no unauthorized activity occurs. Hot Space, they priced above the range, and they also opened strong. But there's some signs of fatigue, like I mentioned. First, four of the six IPOs that began trading today were priced at the low end of expectations, or in the case of Stitch Fix, below expectations. Now, this tells us that investors believe the companies are trying to price their IPOs too high. This was a big issue earlier in the year, and when companies cut the prices, the companies traded better after they went public. And we may be seeing that again. Three companies postponed their IPOs this week, citing market conditions. In other words, they couldn't get the price they wanted. We've also seen a raft of Chinese IPOs in the past few months. But despite high levels of interest, many of the recent ones have traded below their initial prices. So here's the bottom line. The IPO market is definitely back, but investors aren't willing to pay what they see are inflated prices. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange.
Time now for our weekly market monitor. As an energy play that he says should provide a great dividend, an ETF pick that stands to benefit from tax reform, he thinks, and an ETF for investors looking for yield. It is his first time on the program, but he's going to do just fine. He's Phil Blancato, the CEO of Ladenburg Thalmann Investment Management. Phil, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hi, everybody. How you doing?
We're great. Let's get your thoughts about this second week in a row of a little bit of a swoon for the market. Is it anything that you're worried about?
No, not really. When you think about earnings season, it's been pretty strong. You look at total earnings up around 7%, and you look at total sales, which I care more about, up over 5%. Those are strong numbers, and you continue to see whether it's the housing starts that came up today. You see inflation moderating, even wages up around 2.5%. Those are all good, what we call Goldilocks numbers, enough to not too hot, not too cold. The economy is just kind of warm enough to keep going.
All right.
And that'll support stocks.
All right. So let's get to your first pick, the iShares Russell Midcap Value ETF.
Well, you think about that wonderful term we call it a Santa Claus rally. Going into the end of the year, there's a lot of euphoria around consumer spending, and that's what's held up the economy. And mid-cap value stocks are only up about 9% on the year, when their sister stocks, mid-cap growth, are up over 21%. So you're getting a cheaper sector of the market that's going to do well in the fourth quarter because of companies like Best Buy and Royal Caribbean and names you know, consumer names you know, are going to do real well in this fourth quarter. So fourth quarter earnings, strong consumer, and then tax cuts. Tax cuts will have a profound impact on middle company stocks, mid-cap stocks.
All right.
Pay higher tax rates. You can win on two fronts. Taxes, and you win on the fourth
Pick number
quarter.
Two is another ETF, the VanEck Fallen Angel. I'm thinking of the Frankie Valli song. Fallen Angel High Yield Bond Fund. Tell me about it.
Well, we're all chasing yield. You know, you think about your local bank, you don't make any money. We've been sitting in cash making no money for a long time. But a lot of folks are afraid of high yield. There's been a great high yield run. So this is a great way to buy higher yielding bonds that aren't as risky as traditional high yield. A Fallen Angel is a company like a Sprint that they didn't get the T-Mobile deal done. So the stock sold off, the bond sold off. You're getting a nearly 7% yield, but for a $25 billion market cap company. So the call it high yield is a misnomer. It's a Fallen Angel because it was a high credit quality bond that's fallen a bit. You get it cheap, you find value in it, and you get a big dividend. And that's what you want. Be in the high yield space with less risk, and you win on that front really well.
And we finish up with Western Gas Partners. Why do you like
that's
it?
My fun one. That's my, for those of you who are a little opportunistic, want to take a little risk. Stock looks terrible, down over 17% on the year. But the reason why is, earlier in the year, working with their parent company, Anadarko, they issued a bunch of new shares. They converted their preferred stock into common shares, and it diluted the company, meaning they had more shares out there, and it put pressure on the stock down over 20%. But the fundamentals of the company are very strong. Gets a 7% dividend. They got lots of cash coming in. And if you're like me that believes in the future of natural gas, that I think that's the number one heating source going forward, and perhaps a cold winter, you get a stock that's cheap, you get a big dividend, and it's a play on the future of energy in the United States. I think you win on a lot of fronts by owning the company.
Phil, thanks very much. Phil Mancato with Ladenburg Thalmann Asset Management.
Thank you.
Foot Locker shares have their biggest gain since Jimmy Carter was president. That's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. Shares of the athletic shoe retailer soared after that company reported stronger than expected earnings and said it's made strides in its e-commerce platform and mobile app development. The company said there was a rise in demand for Nike shoes and said it's optimistic it could beat its previous guidance for the holiday period. And the shares ran up more than 28%, their best one-day gain in 40 years, closing at $40.82. Meantime, Abercrombie's Hollister brand helped to revive sales in the latest quarter. The teen clothing chain reported sales growth for the first time in more than a year. Those results, along with earnings, topped estimates. And Abercrombie is also forecasting strong sales for the holidays. The shares took off, rising nearly 24% to $15.55. A regulatory filing showed that General Electric's new CEO, John Flannery, recently bought 60,000 shares in the embattled company. The transaction, worth more than $1 million, could be viewed as Flannery's vote of confidence in the conglomerate. GE shares, which initially rose after the announcement, finished down fractionally to $18.21.
Apple says it's delaying the release of its HomePod speaker until 2018. The tech giant said it needs a little more time to tweak the $350 device and expects to launch it early next year. The product marks Apple's first entry into the smart speaker world. And Apple shares were off about 0.5% at $170.15. Despite facing challenging retail situations at two major hurricanes, Ross Stores said late yesterday it beat its own expectations for quarterly results. The off-price clothing and home goods retailer also blew past street expectations, hiked its guidance for the quarter and the full year. Shares up, finished higher, nearly 10% so, at $72.25.
The opioid epidemic now claims the lives of 100 people a day in this country. That's according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That has drug companies searching for new non-addictive ways to treat pain. And they're getting some important clues from genetics. Meg Terrell has our story of modern medicine.
Some might think Steve Pede has a hidden superpower.
He broke his foot and it was kind of swelling up and he was having, you know, it was uncomfortable and he was not walking like a normal person should. And he just kind of duct taped it and went to work.
Pete is 36 years old, and because of a rare genetic mutation, he's never felt pain. But what may seem like a genetic gift is actually incredibly dangerous. Pete has lost count of how many bones he's broken.
Probably somewhere around the high 70s, low 80s.
And often doesn't realize he's severely injured himself until months later. Pete's condition is called congenital insensitivity to pain, or CIP. It's only been identified in a few dozen people. but has helped spur a hunt for a whole new class of non-addictive medicines to relieve pain. Across the country, Reed Milius and her siblings grew up with the opposite problem, an intense pain nobody seemed to understand.
One time, I was having like an attack for several days, and finally I went to the hospital and they were like, oh, it's psychosomatic, there's nothing wrong with you.
It wasn't until her young niece started going through the same thing that Milius did some detective work.
She was exhibiting like all the same symptoms, and I was like, that's great. There's no way. I'm not letting her go through it thinking she's crazy.
Poring through scientific journals, she identified a rare inherited condition called erythromelalgia, also known as man-on-fire syndrome.
I was like, oh my God, this is the first thing I've ever read that actually sounds like what we have.
Genetic testing confirmed her suspicions. Her two daughters have now developed it as well. As Pete and Milius separately dealt with their medical mysteries, what they didn't know was that scientists had been searching for them for years. Scientists like Dr. Stephen Waxman.
We were searching for rare experiments of nature.
Waxman and his team are researching potential new approaches to treating pain, driven by discoveries of people with rare genetics like Pete and Milius. It turns out their conditions are caused by mutations in the same gene for a sodium channel called NAV1.7.
It's like a little volume knob on pain signaling neurons. You turn it up, they're going to be shouting when they should be whispering. Turn it down, they don't make any noise. They don't send pain signals.
Now, half a dozen drug companies are working on medicines targeting NAV1.7, trying to mimic Pete's genes in a drug.
Myself personally, and I think also at Amgen, we all feel a sense of urgency. You know, this opioid crisis is really, we're living it right now. This is not something that we're anticipating.
The medicines are potentially years away from hitting the market, and they must go through rigorous safety and efficacy testing in clinical trials. But researchers say they hold the promise of delivering pain relief to millions of people without the side effects, including addiction, of opioids. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Meg Terrell.
Coming up, Tesla unveils a new electric semi-truck and a roadster. But the company is facing a major challenge under the hood.
We want to remind you about a special program we're putting together for on retirement. On Thanksgiving, we will explore the retirement crisis in America and different ways you can fund your future. We want to know how you're saving and some of the challenges you're facing. Tell us by logging on to our website. It's nbr.com. Clicking on Contact Us, you can also post a comment on our Facebook page or on Twitter. If you have a question for our personal finance expert, Gene Chatsky, you can email it. Short video to nbrmail@cnbc.com.
Amazon has been quietly going after truck drivers. The company has designed an app to help delivery drivers get in and out of warehouses faster. The app is called Relay. It's Amazon's first attempt to automate the truck delivery process, which relies on paperwork and is prone to errors. It's a big market to tap into, valued at about $800 billion. Because roughly 80% of cargo in the U.S. is transported by truck.
Tesla, the automaker behind some of those stylish electric cars, says it will revolutionize the trucking industry with an electric semi-tractor trailer. Fans of Tesla's chief Elon Musk love it, but skeptics point out that Tesla is still struggling to build its latest model and make money. Phil LeBeau is in Hawthorne, California.
Tesla says this is the future of trucking. All electric semis that go up to 500 miles fully charged and cost 20% less to operate than comparable diesel rigs.
From day one, having a Tesla semi will beat a diesel truck on economics. Day one. And this is a worst case scenario.
Trucking giant J.B. Hunt says it will reserve multiple Tesla semis. Other trucking companies may do the same. Intrigued by Tesla's new take on the semi, including a steering wheel in the center of the cab and touch screens replacing standard instrument panels.
While the Tesla semi was the headline before tonight's unveiling, the real star is this beauty, the new Tesla Roadster.
With a ridiculously fast 0 to 60 time of 1.9 seconds, the all-electric Roadster is expected to have a range of 620 miles.
You'll be able to travel from LA to San Francisco and back at highway speed without recharging. The point of doing this is to just give the hardcore smackdown to gasoline cars.
Tesla fans love the idea of a super fast sports car, but many are waiting and wondering when Tesla will straighten out production problems that have slowed deliveries of the company's newest car, the Model 3.
At some point, he's got to deliver those before he can, you know, convince everyone that he's going to be able to deliver things like trucks that have to be used by businesses and be very dependable and on time.
The present may be challenging, but Elon Musk knows Tesla fans and customers will remain loyal as the company plans for a future with electric cars and trucks. Phil LeBeau, Nightly Business Report, Hawthorne, California.
Walmart says it plans to be among the first companies to pilot Tesla's all-electric semi-heavy-duty truck. It ordered 15 of them with the hopes that they will help the retailer meet its long-term sustainability goals. Walmart added that it has a long history of testing out new technology. J.B. Hunt, as Phil mentioned, also reserved multiple vehicles for use on the West Coast. Now, that sent shares of truck makers lower today, as you see, Cummins, PACCAR, and Navistar among them.
It'll be fascinating to watch.
Yes.
That does it for us tonight on Nightly Business Report. I'm Sue Herrera. Thanks for joining us.
And thanks for me as well. I'm Tyler Matheson. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you Monday.